Pro Savings Days are back at Lowe's. My Lowe's Pro Rewards members save even more with limited-time doorbuster deals. Save $5 on 24-count Contractor's Choice 42-gallon trash bags, now just $14.78. Plus, get your choice select DeWalt Elite Series saw blades for $9.98. Not a Pro Rewards member? Join for free today at Lowe's. Valid through 9/17. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. See Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Hello citizen. Be advised this content creator is human and is therefore subject to human error. Any information provided by this content creator should be cautiously approached as it may be nothing more than allegation. Remember, trust your government, consume appropriate content, and be cautious of all conspiracy theories as they are the tools of the rebellion.
Hey guys, welcome back to the 21CD podcast. As always, I'm your ghost, John. If this is your first time here, welcome. Just know, this is the third episode in a trilogy on this topic, so please go back and check out the Serpent Cult Parts 1 and 2 from my past couple weeks. To all my OGs, my original gangsters, my dystopian desperados, thanks for your continued attention. Love you guys. If you guys want to support the podcast, you can start by liking and following. And if you want to do even more from there, you can head over to 21cdstudios.com and find my links to the podcast and other places. And give me a follow there as well, please. We also have propaganda for sale in the online store right now. And for all wondering, all orders are currently fulfilled and they are on their way to you. For those who are wondering, I've also added a donation page to the website. Many of you have been asking how to donate to me if the Buy Me a Coffee link doesn't work. And there's now a donation page on my website, 21cdstudios.com. All these links are in the description, of course. Your donations and support are currently enabling what I hope will be a somewhat life-changing journey to uncover some evidence of the hidden folk in Iceland. I'm going to be returning there in September, and I'm going to spend many hours eating grass and hiding amongst the volcanic fields in hope of seeing something unexplainable. So I've been buying tons of gear and getting ready for this adventure. I'm extremely excited. So I'm really excited, especially to share it with all of you guys. So long story short, thanks for your support financially to those who have supported and those who are considering. All right, guys, we are officially wrapping up this topic of the Serpent Cult of Malta, the Brotherhood of the Snake, the Knights Templar, all that fun stuff. This is the third and final part of this Serpent Cults of Malta mini-series, and it's been an incredible little journey into the dark underground, but it's time to change course, I think. So We're going to cover a number of insane aspects of Malta and the serpent cults today. We're going to talk about the Knights Hospitaller and how they executed the Templars a little bit for money and power. We're also going to talk about how they actually are one of the most powerful pillars of the Brotherhood of the Snake, and how they're probably also the same group that gave an extension of life to another real-life cult behind the hit video game Assassin's Creed. We're going to then dive into the Vatican, some of the bizarre serpent symbolism there, and we're going to visit some other historical parallels and prophecies and take a look at how there really is this movement to suppress knowledge of this type. And it essentially extends as far as the destruction of ancient sites by these modern elites, so that we can't trace both their and our histories. So there you go. Let's get into it. When the Hospitallers, later to be branded the Knights of Malta, murdered the Templars, the theories suggest they in turn inherited the power of all that the Templars possessed, thereby becoming the next chapter of the Brotherhood of the Snake, because the Knights Templar were a part of this Brotherhood of the Snake, as we've been discussing in the past couple episodes. We talked a bit about the Templars in the last episode, but to connect them to the modern Brotherhood of the Snake, the cult that extends all the way to the Vatican, and then the world over, by the way, we have to look a little bit deeper. So we're going to look at this other secret order that we haven't mentioned yet, and it's the Order of Assassins. This is the order that the Assassin's Creed games are based off of, and they actually existed. So this Order of Assassins, called the Hashashin, they were far more than just a group of medieval Nazarius Mali warriors. They, under the leadership of Hassan Isaba, the Brotherhood perfected the art of manipulation and assassination to a level that had never been seen before. They were the unseen hand behind the political chessboard of the Middle East, and they used it. They used fear and stealth, and they essentially were able to manipulate nation and bend powerful rulers to their will. And these assassins didn't just kill for money or ideology. They were part of a much larger plan, a master strategy, if you will, to sow chaos and order simultaneously, to destabilize and then rebuild in their Islamic image. But here's where it gets really fascinating. The techniques, the psychological tactics, the methods they employed, they weren't lost with the fall of their mountain fortress in Alamut, where they were finally torched down. Somehow their methods were passed down like an heirloom, influencing other secretive groups that came after them. They pioneered, for instance, the use of drugs and hallucinogens to manipulate perception and belief, creating unwavering loyalty and fanatical devotion in their followers. It was really insane. They were promised this luxurious heavenly future upon their death with all of these women and treasures of the earth. And they manipulated them with drugs. It was crazy. Their covert operations and deep infiltration of societies essentially became the blueprint for modern intelligence agencies like the FBI, the CIA. Now consider the Knights Templar, the warrior monks of Christendom. Officially, they were established to protect Christian pilgrims in the Holy Land, but beneath this sort of noble facade, there's a much darker and more complex reality. The Templars amassed an unimaginable fortune, and they were the fathers of this global banking system. And they became one of the most powerful and mysterious organizations in medieval Europe. They were more powerful than some nations in Europe at the time. And they built a vast network that spanned continents, and their influence reached the very heart of many kings and popes. But it wasn't just wealth that they were after, it was also knowledge. And a lot of the knowledge that they were after was hidden, forbidden type knowledge. And many believe that during their time in Jerusalem, the Templars unearthed some pretty intense ancient secrets that were buried beneath the Temple of Solomon. And the secrets that they uncovered there challenged the foundation of the church that they served and the conventional belief as humanity was utilizing it. They were accused of heresy, of course, of worshiping strange gods. And these are the Templars, guys. And also of practicing arcane rituals that drew upon ancient occult forces. And some of that is definitely propaganda from the Knights of Malta, but some of it was actually real. So when the hammer finally came down on them in 1307, they didn't just disappear, they went underground. And the knowledge that they had gathered, the connections that they had forged, the symbols that they had carved into stone, that kind of stuff, that didn't vanish. They just transformed. The Templars basically became the root from which other secret societies sprouted. And their esoteric teachings spread throughout organizations like the Rosicrucians, the Freemasons, and ultimately this mythical Illuminati that may or may not be, right? But things were also stolen from them, as in the case of when the Knights of Malta assassinated them. But what ties the assassins, the Order of Assassins, and the Templars together is their shared mastery of this secrecy, this manipulation, and this influence. Both groups were initiates in the ancient mysteries, holding knowledge and influence and power that wasn't meant for your regular person, the masses, but for a select few who could utilize it properly. And the Assassins' method of psychological warfare and the Templars' deep understanding of hidden truths and occult rituals converged over time. They intertwined in a sort of secret lineage that persists in various forms even today. It's no coincidence that the modern secret societies, like the Freemasons or the Illuminati or the Bilderberg Group, they carry echoes of both the Assassins and the Templars. The rituals, the symbols, this weird network of influence, they all have their roots in these two powerful orders. And the secret doctrines of the Templars were said to have been passed down through the centuries, but we all know that the church got hold of probably most of them, and they merged with sort of clandestine operations often pioneered by the Assassins to create this sort of new elite who they believe they are the rightful rulers of the world, right? And that's kind of the Dark Ages were a time of, kingdoms that were being made for the rest of time. And some of those kingdoms were not seen. So if you truly understand this lineage, if you really start to understand it a bit, then you recognize that the conspiracies of today are not just random acts or mere coincidences. They are the calculated moves of some ancient sort of chess game that's being played on a very grand global scale. And these secret societies that are born sort of from the Templars and the Assassins, they don't seek anything less than total control as some sort of new world order. They're the puppet masters behind governments, economies, and even religions, orchestrating all sorts of wars and revolutions and crises to consolidate their power. I mean, look at what's going on in the Middle East as we speak. It's been going on for my entire life. The connection is clear to me. The Order of Assassins and the Knights Templar are not relics of the past. They are the progenitors of a hidden hierarchy that continues to manipulate and direct the world from the shadows, pulling strings to guide humanity toward an endgame that only they can see. But how do we connect them to the Brotherhood of the Snake? Because again, you have what appear to be two opposites or very different belief sets somehow being the same thing. You have the Christianity side and then you have the Muslim side. And it's not something that most understand, how they could be the same thing. The Brotherhood of the Snake is said to be obviously the most ancient secret society, founded in the mists of prehistory by the figure of Enki or Ea in ancient Sumer. The original purpose of the Brotherhood, according to esoteric tradition, was to enlighten humanity by imparting forbidden knowledge. Knowledge about the origins of mankind, the mysteries of outer space, hidden forces that govern human existence. And this knowledge was not meant for just your regular people, but for a select few initiates who were seen as capable of wielding it. Similar to like we were talking with the Templars and their obsession with finding this forbidden knowledge that only a few could wield. Over time, the Brotherhood of the Snake was infiltrated, like many cults have been and continue to be, and they were corrupted by those who sought to use this knowledge not for enlightenment, but for control. So what started as a force for human liberation and awakening became a dark order, using the wisdom that this order had collected to manipulate and dominate. And the Brotherhood basically became the root from which countless other secret societies grew. And they all sort of traced their lineage back to this ancient pursuit of power through hidden knowledge. The less accepted, but probably the one that I like more, is the theory that this whole thing is some sort of effort on the behalf of the Anunnaki or the Elohim to essentially wipe out the story of God. And it is from them that the Brotherhood of the Snake really comes, not from humans seeking out knowledge and writing it down and stuff. It's actually the knowledge is from the Elohim or the Anunnaki. That's sort of the way that I lean. And their mission is to kill God, to eliminate the evidence of God. But I digress. Fast forward to the 11th century when the Order of Assassins that we've been talking about, the Hashashin, they emerged in Persia. They're not only religious, but they're also political. And they're also covert. And they use espionage, psychological warfare, and assassination. Very useful allies. And the assassins were already working. They were masters of this manipulation, and they had their little fingers in courts all over the world. They were influencing politics even in Europe, and they were operating at the same time. And they understood the Brotherhood of the Snake, that real power lays in the shadows. And if they were going to control the world, they would not be able to do it with the biggest army, but with a very lethal, small, dark web of characters. The Brotherhood of the Snake, after, you know, they were corrupted or sort of something happened that pushed them into the underground, they didn't just vanish. It morphed and it spread, and it was in the process of influencing many cultures at the same time, groups all over the world, and speaking with other cults and other sort of secret organizations like the Templars and the Order of Assassins, and then, of course, later the Knights of Malta and the Vatican. They're all part of the same sort of thing, and in a lot of cases, they are the same exact thing. But there's a couple other details, some points that suggest an even deeper link. For instance, both the Brotherhood of the Snake and the Order of Assassins were placing strong emphasis on the possession of secret knowledge. That's one of the reasons that this Order of Assassins was so dangerous. And for the Brotherhood, the knowledge was cosmic in nature. So they were looking at hidden truths of existence and literally power structures in the universe. And for the Assassins, they were more interested in religion and political sort of knowledge, because they wanted to be able to manipulate such things via subterfuge or strategic control, whatever you want to call it. So both groups sort of used initiation rituals to indoctrinate their members to ensure very deep loyalty and secrecy. And the Assassins were known for their use of drugs, which is a trick that later the Templars and other secret organizations also began to use. And the Brotherhood of the Snake used its knowledge to influence all sorts of people, rulers, religious elites, powerful rich merchants, all sorts of people, anybody who could support their cause. And that's how you have all these massive banks nowadays, these groups that just seem like they appear out of nowhere. They're not appearing out of nowhere. These are all funded by these underground cults, these groups of people, this web of people who are part of this Brotherhood of the Snake. And they manipulate world governments, world leaders, wars. That's why you have the same group often funding both the beginning of the war as well as the cleanup of the war, and then selling both sides guns at the same time. Like, this is all part of the same game, and it's all by the same people. All these groups were committed to preserving their agendas indefinitely as well. The assassins were willing to sort of bide their time, and the Brotherhood of the Snake, which maintained its continuity through secrecy and careful selection of its initiates, continues to this day to sort of, in a multi-generational way, influence, and the agenda is passed down through the centuries. Today, we see the influence of both the Brotherhood of the Snake and the Order of Assassins in modern secret societies, from the Freemasons to the Illuminati, the Templars, whatever you want to call them. The tactics pioneered by the Order of Assassins, covert infiltration, the psychological manipulation, these tactics were extremely useful and beneficial to many of these very secret groups, and they've all adapted them and expanded upon them. The Brotherhood's original agenda lives on in the workings of these societies, all moving us sort of ever closer to the final realization, if you will, of their goal, a sort of new world order where the hidden elite hold ultimate sway over the destiny of humanity. That's pretty much what it's about on the human level. Of course, they don't know, or maybe they do and they just don't care, or they're going to cross that bridge when they come to it, that everything is being manipulated by even stronger, more spiritual beings that they can't control. But believing in this connection means understanding that history is not a series of random events, but that everything is carefully orchestrated by unseen hands, powers that are outside of your vision and you will never understand. It's a plan that has been in motion since the dawn of civilization, and it'll continue to guide us toward this unknown future that is only known to those who possess this secret knowledge, if you want to call it that. The Brotherhood of the Snake and the Order of Assassins are just two pieces of this larger puzzle, and it's a puzzle that stretches across time and space. At times it's hidden in plain sight, and other times it's literally flaunted. The Brotherhood of the Snake, this serpent cult of sort of divine power, is constant. It should be thought of as a constant thing. It is ever present. The many cults and groups that it chooses to manifest in are the things that change. For instance, it doesn't take looking at the Vatican for very long before you start to notice that all the serpent worship there is very, well, for lack of a better word, satanic in nature. And we have the serpent in the symbols of our medicines, as well as institutions for health and long life. It's everywhere, because the Brotherhood of the Snake is constant. And it appears somewhere in ancient times that the Brotherhood of the Snake took this idea of serpent worship from an event called upon by God himself. This is one of the interesting things about this theory, that people who argue against it and for it both sort of prove a point to me. So people who say, like, there is no Brotherhood of the Snake and it doesn't have anything to do with the serpent symbolism and everything, I point them to the Bible, first of all, this story that I'm about to tell you, and they will either say, well, I don't believe in the Bible, so that holds no water, and then they will instantly turn to a Greek myth that is basically the same story. So what we are seeing is the culmination that this is probably where the original serpent worship began, and it starts with this story in the Bible. So that staff with the cross and the snake that's on it, that's in all of these symbols, it's called a caduceus, and it is of biblical origin. It's a rod with a brass snake in it. And the Greeks, over 1,000 years later, gave their god Hermes that same rod with wings on the top and two snakes intertwined around it. But their god of healing, Asclepius, had the same rod and snake that Moses made, right? What a coincidence. The first appearance of the symbol, especially in relation to healing, is found in the Old Testament, and this would have been something like 1400 BC, and it states that the people spoke against God and against Moses. Why have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in this desert? For there is no bread and no water, and we are disgusted with this rotten food. And the Lord sent fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people, and many of the people of Israel died. Therefore, the people came to Moses and said, "We've sinned, for we have spoken against the Lord and against you. Please pray to the Lord that he take away the serpents from us." And Moses prayed for the people. And the Lord said to Moses, "Make a fiery serpent and set it upon a pole. And it shall come to pass that everyone that is bitten, when he looks upon it, shall live." And Moses made a serpent of brass, and he put it up on a pole, and it came to pass that if the serpent had bitten any man, when he beheld the serpent of brass, he lived. And you can read this story for yourself. It's Numbers 21, 5 through 9. About 1,000 years later, in somewhere around 550 BC, the Jews had preserved not only Moses' 5 books of the Torah and other of their prophets' writings, but had also preserved the serpent of brass on a pole, which Moses, long ago, had made as a mark of healing for the Jews. Hezekiah did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, just as his father David had done. So he removed the high places, he smashed the sacred stones, and he cut down the Asherah poles. He broke into pieces the bronze snake that Moses had made, for up to that time the Israelites had been burning incense to it. That's 2 Kings 18, 1-4. So we see that they had forgotten the history of the snake on a pole. And since it was such a long time since the meaning was taught, they had actually been worshiping it as a sort of pagan symbol, as a god. It, this snake on a pole, had a name. It was Nehushtan, and it's a derogatory name, apparently, in Hebrew. It means something like a mere piece of brass. The right in the eyes of the Lord, King Hezekiah, tore it down and rid Israel of all the rest of its pagan idols as well. It's ironic that these gods are so often made of mere brass, just like Baal, who we talked about in the last episode. Special thanks to earlychurchhistory.com for that summary. That was a great write-up. So we can see that the Brotherhood of the Snake can have ties to this very event in human history. When mankind began to worship a serpent that God literally used to prove that he was sovereign over. It's insane, but this is important to note because much of Christianity these days is a fusion of a portion of what the Bible says and all manners of other cultures and ancient religious practices that Christianity just sort of steals. So anyway, what a perfect skin to slip into for these fallen angels, if you ask me, these ancient gods that need a vessel to rule and deceive with. The snake is obviously a perfect choice. So in some conspiracy theories, the Knights Hospitaller, they're seen as inheritors of the Templar legacy, which includes hidden knowledge and connections to ancient mysteries. And after the suppression of the Templars, their murder, some believe that the Hospitallers took the knowledge, they absorbed all the Templar secrets, and brought some of them to the Vatican and kept some of them for themselves, and used them to connect with their newfound allies, the Brotherhood of the Snake. Malta, the sort of landscape for this whole story that we've been telling, is home to the Knights Hospitaller. It's rich in ancient history and mysterious sites, and it includes the House of Flini Hypogeum, is what most of the first episode of this little mini-series was about, the catacombs underneath. It's a subterranean structure that some believe was used for rituals related to this serpent worship, this Brotherhood of the Snake. That's why it's called the Serpent Cults of Malta. When the Knights Hospitaller, according to these theories, sort of rose to power, they weren't just military protectors, but they were also guardians of these ancient sacred sites where the snake priests were most likely conducting rituals to connect with serpent deities. This was just part of the two cultures combining and their close relation to these secret sort of orders of knowledge and esoteric practices. The snake priests are believed to have been part of this ancient cult that worshipped these serpent deities, and they were potentially connected to the Anunnaki, these reptilian beings. And this cult is thought to have existed in Malta long before the arrival of the Knights of Malta. And in modern conspiracy theories, the Knights of Malta are often linked to sort of broader secret societies like the Illuminati or, you know, Freemasonry. And it's kind of ironic that before it was them, it was the Templar who was linked to these sort of things. These theories propose that the Knights, through their connections from the Brotherhood of the Snake and these other ancient serpent cults of Malta, continue to sort of wield significant influence in global affairs. They're still here today, as we talked about in the last episode. They are literally a sovereign group, not held by the same laws that normal mankind is held by. So we see yet again how easy it is to sort of envision that the Brotherhood of the Snake, this great serpent cult, could be connected to what appears to be its sworn enemy, Christianity. And if such things are true, and there's very little to say that it isn't, because most of what I've been saying is far beyond speculation, it's known as fact, they could all be still responsible for not only the mysterious disappearances that have been going on Malta and in the Black Desert, but they also probably know where the geoglyphs are coming from, or came from, where the megaliths came from. They're probably responsible for why much of the conflict in the Middle East is happening. And now, much of the conflict in Europe is also rooted in this sort of bizarre topic. And if we explore the conspiracy theories surrounding these serpent priests, these priests of Astarte and their alleged elongated skulls and their deformities, because these weren't normal-looking priests, these were very alien-looking beings. According to these theories, these physical traits set them apart. They not only were cosmetic, but they also enabled these priests to sort of have some superhuman abilities and superhuman sensitivities. And, you know, the elongated skulls and the slithering movements that they had to make through their body manipulation, because they were changing their sort of body to look a certain way at times, it's all interpreted as signs of their otherworldly connections to something that they must have witnessed that was so powerful that it convinced them to destroy themselves for this religion, this cult. So is it so crazy to maybe interpret this as signs of their otherworldly connections to these ancient snake gods that don't literally look like snakes, but just have snake-like qualities, thanks to the story that they've stolen from God himself with Moses and his rod? I don't know. We're all just speculating here, but it's an idea, right? So when people say, why Malta? Because these serpent priests was widely talked about in the ancient world. These beings were known as very wise and knowledgeable and powerful. So why Malta, right? Why is Malta where they decided to set up shop? Well, Malta's location in the center of the Mediterranean makes it a crossroad, especially of ancient civilizations, from the Phoenicians to the Romans. And this central position, combined with the isolation, it makes an ideal place for the development and preservation of unique religious and magical practices. You're sort of away from prying eyes, but able to still access extremely beneficial trade routes to get what you need. It's also true that in medieval times, Malta was often depicted in European folklore as a place of mystery and danger, where sort of powerful magical forces could be encountered. And the Knights of St. John, who ruled Malta from 1530 to 1798, were themselves sort of steeped in this esoteric knowledge and these rituals. And this definitely further enhanced the island's reputation as a center of occult power, and it had been establishing itself as such for quite some time before their arrival. The presence of secretive groups and cults, such as those associated with the worship of Astarte, one of these snake deities, suggests a continuity of occult practice on the islands. And these groups might have passed down ancient knowledge through the generations, maintaining Malta and Gozo, which is another island right off of Malta, as hubs of magical and occult power. So how does this all connect to what's going on in the Middle East right now, though? Because that's what we're here to do on this podcast, right? Sort of try to connect the ancient history to the modern dystopian era. We make it real, because it is real, you know? A central theme in many conspiracy theories is this idea of what we've been talking about, ancient bloodlines that trace their origins back to the times of these serpent cults, these magical beings, these gods that came from other places and made their mark on humanity with knowledge and advice. These bloodlines are believed to have preserved their power and influence throughout history, and many politicians are thought to be among that bloodline. And they manipulate everything. These ancient families, or these secret societies, and sometimes we call them governments, have a vested interest in controlling various regions in the world. And this region may be due to its spiritual significance or historical significance. It may still be the Crusades. There's always been a strange pull to this area. Hitler in World War II, the Crusades. What's been going on in the Middle East forever? There are many sites of religious and spiritual importance in the Middle East and in this region. Conspiracy theories often say that these sites are not only significant for their historical or their religious value, but also because they are great hubs of power. Somehow, the key to explaining how our world is, or how it came to be, or how ancient man did things. It's often considered that all of the answers are going to be there in the Middle East somehow. So, of course, the theory suggests that Malta, with all of its ancient temples and megaliths and stories, and its connections to this most ancient of cult, is part of this network of power that includes places like Jerusalem and Mecca and other key areas, right? Control over these sites may grant access to some sort of ancient knowledge or supernatural power. That's kind of what the conspiracy theory is all about. And they kind of support the idea that the conflicts in the Middle East are manifestations of an occult war between these ancient forces of good and evil, of God and Satan, and the serpent being a symbol of both wisdom and deception plays a center role in that narrative. We know it does. I mean, it was one of the first stories that many of us were told, was the story of Adam and Eve. And those who believe in all of this theory might argue that modern leaders, influenced by or maybe part of these ancient traditions, are just continuing in the same process that has been going on since this cult came to be in the first place. You know, there's also the whole idea that Palestine is the situation that's occurring right now is actually prophesied. And if you look at it that way, these serpent cults or their modern equivalents are basically key players, essential players in bringing about these events, making this chaos occur so that a prophecy can be fulfilled. And the involvement of these groups in Malta and their connections to ancient serpent deities is seen as part of that larger pattern of events that lead to this prophecy being fulfilled. And then you have the much darker idea, which is that conflicts like that, the one that we're seeing in Palestine right now, is not just about land or politics, but is actually a giant satanic ritual. And that by controlling the outcome of these conflicts, elites are performing a global ritual, maybe because due to the amount of blood that needs to be shed or the destruction of nations. I don't know, but it's meant to assert their dominance and basically maintain their connection to the ancient powers, these ancient gods that they still believe are out there. Now, we're going to venture even deeper into the rabbit hole here, and this one gets a little bloody. And this is a little something that I thought up all by myself, so if it totally misses the mark, I'm sorry. But in various ancient cultures, particularly those in the Mediterranean and the Near East, blood sacrifices were believed to appease gods or spirits, some of which were associated with the underworld. And the idea of channeling blood through tunnels or pipes to these deities suggests a pretty highly organized and secretive sort of ritualistic like system, like a concentration camp made for rituals. And which, I mean, there's nothing saying that that wasn't what that was either, by the way. But the Carthaginians, who were descended from the Phoenicians, are often cited in conspiracy theories involving blood rituals due to historic accounts of child sacrifice. The infamous Tophet of Carthage, an ancient burial site, has been linked to such ritual sacrifices, but people don't really want to talk about that. But it does, you know, if you look at this kind of stuff, these accounts, it suggests that these Carthaginians, who had a presence in Malta, could have used underground tunnels or pipes as part of their sacrificial rituals, and these conduits would allegedly funnel the blood of sacrifices to specific locations, and that could be deep underground where the offerings could reach these deities. Long story short, if this theory is true, the catacombs beneath Malta could have included hidden channels that would carry blood from the surface from the sacrifices that were ongoing into the earth directly to these underworld snake entities that they believed were down there. Because let's remember, the serpent is often seen hand in hand with the underworld. All right, so blah, blah, blah. The serpent cults exist, whatever. The Brotherhood of the Snake, the Knights of Malta, the Knights Templar, the Order of Assassins, they've all sort of been around, right? We've sort of established that. But how does this connect to the Black Desert, the Harat al-Sham, from our first part of this little mini-series? Because we mentioned that there was some sort of extreme sign of reptilian presence in this Black Desert that connected to Malta. And we're finally going to reach that point, how the Black Desert connects. Conspiracy theorists propose that both Malta and this Black Desert, this Harat al-Sham, which is it's a volcanic field in the Middle East. It spans sort of across Syria, Jordan, and Saudi Arabia. And it's part of this ancient global network of underground cities and tunnels. And these subterranean realms are believed to have been inhabited by the same people, these non-humans, these snake people that were found in Malta, and potentially similar beings all over the world. And the theory suggests that there's vast ancient tunnel systems that connect all of these regions, allowing these hidden civilizations to communicate and travel between distant parts of the world. The Harat al-Sham is filled with volcanic caves and tunnels, and they're seen as sort of extensions of this global network. Both Malta and the Black Desert are believed to be key locations in this world of ancient occult rituals, and these regions are thought to be where blood magic centers, serpent worship, and other esoteric practices, pagan practices that have been preserved and passed down through all of these secret societies that we've been talking about, all these hidden elite. So in the context of this theory, the tunnels and these underground chambers are not just physical conduits, but also metaphysical ones. But it gets kind of weirder, because it seems like they left graffiti saying this. The Harat al-Sham region is home to thousands of ancient stone structures, and we went over some of them in the first part of this series. And they're often referred to as works of the old men, and these structures include wheels, kites, and other strange shapes that are best seen from way high up in the air. And some of these formations seem to resemble what appear to be embryos or other biological forms. These structures, of course, they're dating back thousands of years. They're believed to have been created by ancient civilizations for purposes that we still don't know. And they appear to look like human and lizard embryos. So, apparently it's a well-known fact in embryology that early human embryos and the embryos of many other animals, including reptiles, share strikingly similar stages of development. And during certain stages of gestation, human embryos have physical characteristics, such as tails and gill-like structures, that seem to resemble those of reptiles. And this similarity has been noted in many scientific studies, but it's sometimes taken by some of these more radical conspiracy theorists as evidence of a deeper connection. And according to these ideas, these geoglyphs in the Black Desert that resemble these embryonic forms were deliberately created to reflect this similarity. They are a picture in our history book. This theory says that the creators of these geoglyphs had some kind of advanced understanding of embryology, possibly far beyond what is typically attributed to ancient civilizations. Pretty freaking nuts, if you ask me. And if this is true, then these geoglyphs might also represent evidence of some kind of ancient hybridization practice, where early humans, or advanced beings, possibly extraterrestrial or reptilian, experimented with combining human and reptilian DNA, like we hear about with the Nephilim and the Anunnaki. And the geoglyphs are seen as symbolic or literal representations of these experiments, possibly. Maybe they're created to honor or document these practices, a page in our history book. And it's just there for anybody who wants to look at it from the air. This theory is connected to broader narratives, of course, like we just kind of mentioned about the Anunnaki, which are sometimes depicted as having reptilian features, as we've already discussed. And if they really did engage in genetic manipulation or breeding programs with early humans, and that really did lead to the creation of some sort of hybrid species, it would make sense that they would try to record that just as we try to record our history. And there's still other people who say that the geoglyphs just indicate a forgotten or sort of suppressed ancient science that involved the advanced understanding of genetics and embryology, and that the precise resemblance to embryos, both human and reptilian, suggests that these ancient people just had knowledge comparable to or even surpassing ours that we have now. And this knowledge very well might have been used in secret rituals or to influence the development of human civilization in ways that are not fully understood today. We could have been advanced in a different way. Right now, we are very advanced in a sort of cosmetic, consumerist sort of way. But it's possible that in the past, before the last great reset or whatever happened, you know, when all of these megaliths and all of these ancient mysteries that we discuss around campfires nowadays, when they were actually modern in their time, they were probably advanced in just a different way, not in the same way, the materialistic way that we are now. Right? So maybe they did understand this kind of stuff, and maybe these are, you know, ancient graffitis, ancient landscape paintings of embryos indicating that we have some kind of connection to the reptilians, or that we were manipulated at one point to believe that, and therefore we made these structures. Who knows? There's any number of crazy ideas that you could have for that. But they're all conspiracy theories. They're all just sort of ideas that are thrown out there because they're unexplainable things on the landscape. And you got to be the judge for yourself. You know, the fact that many ancient geoglyphs, though, and megaliths like this and stuff can only be fully appreciated from way high up in the air does make you wonder. It does make you wonder if there were ancient sky people or beings up above that the people down on Earth were trying to worship or communicate with. Because these large-scale designs that are only visible from the sky, how do you explain that? They must have believed something was looking down on them. Unless they just like to move big rocks around. Today, Malta and much of the ancient and sacred sites around the Black Desert, they just fall to warfare, neglect, and the elements. And that's not all. There's a suspicious theory that even ISIS has been paid on a number of occasions to destroy entire cities worth of ancient truths of our world. They'll build a mine on top of something that might, some hole in the ground that might contain the secrets to our origins. They want this information, this knowledge to be destroyed, to be suppressed. We cannot find out. Governments are literally, deliberately destroying ancient sites to suppress evidence that contradicts the narrative, right? And when the governments of the world and, you know, the violent terrorist groups, when they destroy these sites, the theory goes that those in power are preventing this knowledge from coming to light so that we just keep following our little path. The destruction of these ancient sites, you know, particularly associated with pre-Christian or non-monotheistic religions, is part of this long-standing campaign to just eradicate pagan traditions and knowledge as well. And this idea comes from the idea that certain religious or ideological groups are interested in erasing traces of ancient belief systems. Just like when emperors in the ancient days would move into another emperor's land, they would sometimes erase all of the history of their enemy, just wipe it off the face of the earth. And it's no different with these culty religious groups here who attempt to destroy all evidence of the belief sets of the others. You know, the deliberate destruction, though, is something that we see ongoing by forces that shouldn't be destroying history, like the United States government. Anyway, listen. I provided you with a crazy lens to look through, okay? If you look through this lens, you have been given the power to see some sort of forbidden truth that may or may not be. I'm just a man. I'm just spitting out ideas. That's what we do on the podcast. We discuss stuff. Not everything I say is true, and not all the information I provide is true, affirmatively. Sometimes stuff slips through the cracks, you know? People come at me all the time, and they say, like, you didn't research your topic. If I didn't research my topic, I wouldn't have anything to say. You know, I have to research these topics all the time. I'm constantly reading about something new because I have to be episodes in advance. But with all of the research that I did on this topic, I've provided you with a way to sort of look into what may have seemed like too crazy to be true before in a way that makes sense. You know, throughout the centuries, mankind has been experimented on, we've been enslaved, been sacrificed, confused. And the reasons why can still be read about in ancient texts, including the Bible. The Bible even contains, you know, further prophecies of how this whole great struggle will end. So, isn't it kind of funny how simple missing persons case or a hidden catacomb or unexplained skeletal remains found on an island in the Mediterranean can bring us full circle to Gaza or Palestine, Israel, the Middle East, to the Catholic Church, one of the most powerful cults known to man, and to the censorship of our research, even on a hobbyist level. Isn't it funny how it's all ancient, but it's also all so close? Nothing is as it seems. Nothing ever has been. Since the dawn of time, this war to cover up the truth has raged. And for all we know, it's already caused multiple resets. It's caused at least one for sure. It makes you wonder how important those secrets must really be. Thanks for tuning in to the 21CD podcast, guys. Next week, we're on to a totally different topic. I'm really excited to move on. This was a great, fun little adventure, but I think we've all reached the end of it. It's time to move on. Remember, don't drink the water and question everything. Later.
If you've been thinking about getting serious with your money, like actually serious, now's the time. The Motley Fool is offering new members 50% off their iconic stock recommendation service, Stock Advisor. This is the same service that's crushed the market with recommendations that have returned 1,057% since inception, compared to the S&P 500's 180% over that same period. This isn't guesswork. The Motley Fool has a track record of finding companies before they become household names. So if you want to invest smarter and you like saving money while doing it, go to fool.com/listen to claim your 50% off discount off a one-year term of Stock Advisor. Again, that's fool.com/listen. Returns of 1,057% are from the Motley Fool's product Stock Advisor and measured against S&P 500 returns of 180% as of July 10th, 2025. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. All investing involves a risk of loss. Individual investment results may vary.